Oh, sorry. Citizens' comments? Citizens have 5 minutes to speak. Citizens' comments? The mic isn't on.
I've never used one of these.
All right. Awesome. All right. Sorry about that. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Joel Trudell of 7850 34th Avenue, and I'm here with concerns over the policy. I reviewed 526 of the agenda. I guess the biggest concern I've got is on page two of the agenda, or excuse me, page two of the policy. There's a lot of references to deputies being able to turning off the cameras. The third section of page two says members should document the existence of a recording in any report or other official record of the contact, including any instance where the recorder malfunctioned or the member deactivated the recording. So I've got a problem with that right there. The issue that we're having recorders on officers is because of their judgment. So giving them the judgment to turn off the recorder kind of defeats the purpose of having said recorder. So page two is also filled with, or also has a few other items of concern. Number two here, sorry, this policy is not intended to describe every possible situation. Members should activate the recorder anytime they engage in work-related interactions. So it sounds like the officer, excuse me, the deputies are becoming a manager of this device and not necessarily being peace officers or protecting the public. They're managing an on and off button. Again, I think these devices need to stay on all the time. If there's concern about privacy, concern about youth being recorded, stuff like that, that can all be redacted after the fact, can be censored after the fact. If we look at what happened in Ohio not that long ago, where we had a minor shot by police, if the argument is that we can't film minors, would that incident have just not occurred or been not recorded by the sheriff's department? Again, I don't think that the officers, or excuse me, the deputies should have discretion on turning off the device, and anything that should not be shared with the public can be redacted after the fact. All right, there's a part in here about a failure to reactivate the recording device after a cessation of recording is a serious infraction and liability. Violations result in progressive disciplinary action up to and including suspension or termination. Again, by putting that responsibility on the deputy, we're putting the deputy in an adversarial relationship with that camera. I think that's a bad idea. Don't give the deputy the power to turn the thing on and off. Have it be automatic. Typically, I'm more prepared. I apologize for the shuffling of the pages. All right, page three. We've got a concern here about I'm all out of sorts. I think the main point has been made. The discretion of the cameras being on or off should not be with the deputies. Again, that's the reason why we want to have cameras, is because their judgment and discretion is of concern. Those cameras need to be on at all times whenever they are on duty, and anything that should not be shared after the fact can be redacted, censored, blacked out, whatever. Thank you.
Anyone else? right. We'll move on. Chairman comments. Just welcome back, everybody. Nice to see everyone. Live and in person. Approval of the minutes from April 7th, 2021.
Motion to approve. Second.
Motion approved. Any discussion? Youth and governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
We'll start off with the resolutions, with the civil disturbance unit.
Good evening. I'm Lieutenant Paulson with the Kenosha County Sheriff's Department. This is an MOU in reference to the civil disturbance unit consisting of sworn members of the Sheriff's Department as well as other Kenosha County police agencies, and defines the roles and responsibilities of the participating agencies. Wages, benefits, sick days, vacation days, etc. will be paid to the officers by their parent agency along with any workman's compensation claims for injuries sustained while performing civil disturbance duties and or training. Officers assigned to the unit will be considered to be working under the mutual aid provision in the Wisconsin state statutes. Thank you.
Any questions from the committee?
I do.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have, I haven't seen it, and it might be because I missed it, but do we have a definition of what constitutes civil disturbance, where the civil disturbance unit would be called out or sent to or anything like that?
There is a Wisconsin statute for...
I'm sorry.
There is a Wisconsin statute for civil disturbance / rioting, so there's numerous things that can fall under a civil disturbance. It could be a full-blown riot. It could be in participation of possible civil unrest. An example was before the Jacob Blake announcement from the DA's office was announced, our team was activated in preparedness in case there was a civil disturbance. So those officers and deputies are acting under the civil disturbance unit.
So it's based off of a state statute, if you will, or a state definition?
Correct.
Okay.
I don't have that off the top of my head.
That's fine. I can look it up. Thank you. So we're also looking at all of the different municipalities would basically be responsible for their own law enforcement, everything from their pay to their insurance and all that. Do we know if the, now let's look at Twin Lakes PD. Twin Lakes PD becomes part of this. Will their insurance cover their law enforcement personnel if they're not in Twin Lakes, for instance? Will they cover them if they're going to be, you know, outside? Do we know that if that's?
It's funny you bring up Twin Lakes. I have spoken to that sergeant on our unit, and that is correct. They would be covered by their department, whether we were operating in Summers, Salem, Kenosha.
No, I guess maybe I misspoke. Would their insurance company, their workman's comp or whomever covers the person's injury, be covered if they're not in their municipality, they're out doing something else? Do we know that?
Yes, it would be covered.
Okay.
because they're operating under mutual aid.
Okay, all right, thank you.
You're welcome.
I think that's it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for coming tonight. How is this different from Horace Staples' responsibilities and then Mabus as well? How would that coordinate with those two groups?
I'm sorry, I don't understand your question.
Okay, so you're looking for a civil disturbance unit, right? A memorandum of understanding between all the municipalities. But isn't that what Horace does in combining like the emergency coordination?
It's part of it, but we have the Sheriff's Department has our own civil disturbance unit, which consists of law enforcement officers from outside agencies. So our unit is in existence. And what this is it's a memo of understanding for other departments, their chiefs, to understand when they are operating under our supervision on our civil disturbance team, what the parameters are and what their department would be responsible for, like the wages and workman's comp and stuff like that.
But you would define the roles and responsibilities once it's under your umbrella, is that?
Correct.
Okay. All right, I understand, thank you.
So, point of information, so, sorry. Yeah, thanks for being here tonight. So, you mentioned that the civil disturbance unit exists today. Is that correct?
The Kenosha, it's called the Kenosha County Crowd Control Unit, yes.
Okay. So, the approval tonight is really for the MOU to partner with other municipalities?
We are already partnered with them, but we need, I want something official in writing. Those chiefs have asked for it, and that's why we've come up with this.
So is it appropriate to the chair, is it appropriate to comment then on the actual, like if there are elements of the actual MOU, or is that kind of?
It's all appropriate.
Okay. So my personal feeling is that it, I support this. I think specialized training is great. When I look at the training portion of the MOU, to me, I would prefer that we say that that training is actually mandated for anyone that's going to participate in this, because I would imagine for I would imagine this is similar to, like, for instance, a bombs and explosives unit.
That's correct. We just had mandated training last Tuesday.
Cool. So I would just, I mean, if it's possible, and I'm happy to make a motion that we amend this to actually say that the training is mandated. Okay. Because I feel like that's part of the, if we're going to do this, let's commit to it. It does say that, especially for the ongoing, it makes it, to me, it says, you know, maybe every effort's going to be made for the ongoing training. I feel like it's critical that it be required even for the ongoing training. Is that something you would entertain?
Yeah, we just so you guys are aware, we train a minimum of once a quarter. When the unit initially started, we were training every month. And we take a month off during the summer because of vacations, but yeah, we have mandated trainings and we have mandated guidelines for our trainings, everything from dress codes to what we do at certain times. That's how our practices are broken up. And my team members are mandated to be there. And the only reason they can be excused if they have a, it's gotta be a pretty substantial reason that they're not there. So this training has been mandated.
Okay. But you would agree though that this, that's not what this says? Or do you, if you disagree with that? Well, and it says, to maintain every effort we made to attend ongoing training, and I feel like that should be changed to indicate that the training is required.
Okay.
I'd agree to that too. I'd second that.
I would too.
Oh, you did already.
Yeah.
Question for you. So do you have any problem whatsoever, or anybody in the back there, with what Supervisor Gully said about mandating training? That sounds reasonable to you, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
That's cool for me then, thank you. Yeah, so I would, I'll make a motion then to amend the language around the paragraph for training and yeah, on page two, the 1, 2, 3, fourth paragraph down, team members will be required to participate in.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion on the motion? No further discussion. Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions further on? No, sir.
I don't know.
That was just on. That wasn't on the. That was just on changing the language. We're still on the. We're still. We're still on the whole thing.
I'm sorry.
I move the resolution.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Second.
Is a motion. Second. Any further discussion on the resolution? Okay. No. No further discussion. Youth and Governance.
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Thank you, sir. Now we're done.
All right. Thank you.
Next on the agenda, the bomb explosive training. Does the same thing.
In fact, there should be a order.
It's bad news.
Go ahead, sir.
Hello, members of the board. I'm Lieutenant Steve Baranis. I'm here to present a grant award of the amount of $4,600. It's from the State Wisconsin Emergency Management, which is funded through Homeland Security. This grant will cover registration, travel costs for a tactical explosive breacher training that's going to be held in Volk County, Illinois in June.
Okay. And this Irwin sees it's $4,600, increased expenditures by $4,600, but and there's no additional cost to the taxpayer, correct?
That's correct. There's no local match for this grant.
Okay.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
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 Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Can you just tell me who seconded that?
We'll move to the resolution to appoint Clement Abangwa to the Local Emergency Planning Committee.
Move the resolution.
Okay. All right.
Okay, ready. My name is Lieutenant Horace Staples, Director of Emergency Management for Kenosha County. The resolution I have in front of you is for Clement. I was practicing all day. For Clement to serve a 3-year term as a member of the Local Emergency Planning Committee. And the county executive's request on approval to serve on this particular committee of the Judiciary Law Enforcement Committee, as recommended by the county board, the approval of his appointment to serve as its member, and upon immediate confirmation of the county board until the first day of May 2024, or until a successor is appointed by the county exec, confirmed by the county board. And I do not believe Clement is here to answer any questions.
I'll move the resolution.
Second.
All right, there's a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank
Aye.
You. We'll move to Joseph Potente for the Local Emergency Planning Committee.
Same resolution, this is to appoint Joe Potente to serve as a 3-year member of the Local Emergency Planning Committee. And at the county exec's request for the review of his approval to serve Judiciary and Law Committee, and is recommending the county board approval of this appointment to serve as a LAPC member immediately upon his confirmation by the county board until the first day of May 2024, or until a successor is appointed by the county exec, confirmed by the county board supervisors. And I do have Joe Potente here if you would need for him to answer any questions.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Okay, there's been a motion to approve and a second. Any further discussion? Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. We'll move on to Mr. Pete Wicklund.
Resolution for Peter Wicklund to serve as a three-year member of the Local Emergency Planning Committee. At the county executive's request for review of his approval to serve Judiciary and Law Enforcement Committee, and is recommending the county board approval for this particular appointment. Peter will serve as a member of the local LAPC immediately upon confirmation by the county board up until the first day of May 2024, or until a successor is appointed by the county exec and confirmed by the county board supervisors. And Mr. Wicklund is here. If you need to answer any questions, ask him any questions.
Motion to approve.
Second.
There's a motion to approve and a second. Any further discussion? Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Thank you very much. Now we'll move for the Sheriff's Department body cameras for review. Who will be presenting for us?
There's three of us, Mr. Chair. If you don't mind, we'll sit up here in case it's a little bit longer.
Okay.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Captain Miller, Sheriff's Department. With me, I have interim Captain Klinkhammer and Sergeant Forrester. So we'll be able to answer any questions that you guys might have.
I do have a question.
We'll start, actually, Supervisor Ramble first, then we'll go to you.
Oh, I'm sorry, okay.
Okay. Did you hear the public comments earlier? Okay, specifically as it was discussed about leaving the cameras on at all times versus having discretion. Can you address that?
Well, there's a couple things I can address. One, the battery life won't allow for us to continuously record for that long. I mean, they're 8-hour batteries in the cameras, but if somebody's working a double shift, they're going to be without a camera that second half of their shift. There's not interchangeable batteries. Second, we have built in more safeguards than any policy that we have reviewed in terms of the body cams. We have automatic Bluetooth triggers on the weapon, our duty weapon. So if an officer unholsters their weapon, their camera turns on. We have the door sensor. So if an officer opens their squad door, the body camera turns on. If they go over 90 miles an hour in their squad car, the body cam turns on. If their squad camera is activated, their body cam turns on because it acts as their microphone for their in-squad camera also. It's also geo, what's the word I'm looking for? Automated, right?
There's a geo fence. So we can set it to certain areas on a map that the camera would automatically turn on. And also, as an officer approaches the scene of a call they were dispatched to, for example, if they're responding in a non-emergency mode, the camera doesn't turn on. But as soon as they get within a certain distance of the call they're dispatched to, the camera automatically turns on.
It's a quarter mile. So if they're a quarter mile from a dispatch call, their camera will automatically turn on once they hit that radius. In terms of them deactivating the cameras, so there is times where there's, you know, requests. So the hospitals is one thing, right? Hospitals, HIPAA information, they don't allow video recording in the hospitals. So we have to obviously acquiesce to the hospital policy when we're asked. There's sensitive crimes issues, and yes, all that can be redacted post, you know, request, but there is still sensitivity issues, and, you know, when it comes to victims of crimes, right? Are they gonna talk if there's a camera sitting in their face? And they may request for it to be off. You know, we can still audio record. We can face the camera away from the victim. It doesn't mean that there's not gonna be any recording. It just, there is times that there will be requests for somebody not to be recorded. So I think we've built in a lot of safeguards. Like, we've made our policy in our opinions, and I can, you know, just speak for the scuttlebutt, right? We are very strict on when our cameras are going to be on, and they're going to be on a lot, right? Obviously, the data storage isn't as much of an issue as, you know, some of the other vendors that when we came to you. But there is a management portion of that. You know, if you have an officer working 16 hours, you know, times that, multiply that by however many officers there are. You know, Sergeant Forrester is my records management sergeant, so I can just tell you that the management of that to make sure that it's cataloged correctly, making sure that we have the evidence that we need, the true evidence that we need, and just managing that, with the way the policy sets, he's going to be a busy man. And I think he's already realized that since the implementation started. I think, you know, he wasn't sure what he was getting into, and he's well aware now. But so the management portion of that would just be too big for one guy. With our current squad videos, we have three people that manage just squad videos. We have another person that just manages the campus security videos. So he's taking that role on also, and then to include the body cams and, you know, hypothetically recording 24/7. Because the jail is, if you looked at the jail policy, you know, there's very, very, very limited amount of times when they can turn their cameras off. And there is some, you know, safety, or not safety as much as security issues. Not, I guess that's not the right word either, but like if the officer's walking by the showers, we don't want them recording, right, the inmates in the showers. Can we redact it? Yeah, but that is not the standard that is set by, you know, for PREA, for, you know, just in the jail world. You know, I mean, we have cameras in the jail now that are recording 24/7. Those are the blackout zones, and we need to continue to make those, you know, sacred, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are our policies similar to those in other law enforcement areas, or are they?
So our policy, about 4 or 5 years ago, we partnered with a company called Lexipol, and they developed policies for police agencies all over the country. And each policy is based on an analyzation of law enforcement practice and state and federal laws. So they develop a policy, they send it to us, and then we make it fit our agency. So we have a base grid line that we then have to work with. And our policy is, Lexipol has a certain level. We added things as far as when the recorders must be turned on. And that's based on criticisms done by, there was a study of another department that had body cameras, and they were using the Lexipol policy. And the people that did that study criticized the vagueness of the policy. Yes, you have to turn your camera on when this, and this happened. And so we came up with this language that whenever you're encountering a citizen or dealing with somebody in your official duties, you shall activate the camera. And it's more restrictive than what Lexipol originally sent us. So we didn't review a ton of other agencies because we have kind of the Cadillac of policy writing companies, and we used their grid work and added things to it.
Okay, and thank you. And to piggyback off of, I think, what Kathy Miller brought up, is I'd spoken with a couple of deputies over the weekend or last weekend about that. They both were absolutely in favor of the body cameras, except for when they go to the restroom, and potentially maybe when they're eating, you know, just a little bit of time. So I would understand that. So the camera will turn on automatically under certain circumstances. Is there also a time when they get done eating or whatever, they can also turn it on, or is it only going to turn on at certain?
Well, if they go in to use the bathroom?
Yeah.
Okay, so the way I've always thought about it, law enforcement officers go to gas stations all the time to use the restroom. When you open your car door, the camera's going to turn on. If you're not there for an official call and you're just going there to use the restroom, you can turn it off. But if something happens in there, it's one touch of a button to turn it on. And we expect those deputies to turn them on.
Is there, I guess there'd be training for it, but you know, it's not something that you actually want to think about. It's something you just do, like, right, like your training is for any other type of situation.
Currently, the deputies that are getting assigned cameras are going through 4 hours of training just on activating the camera and classifying the videos that are made. So I work in the jail now, and I was talking to one of our jail supervisors that has that camera, and he said it's become second nature already, and he's only had it a couple days. Turn it on, turn it off.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chair.
I have a question.
Laura, then Chair.
So with regard to the turning on and off, when it is, whether it's manually turned on or off or activated, is that logged?
Yes, there's an audit trail of every single push of the button for their controllers. So if it's on, there is a recording. Okay. If it's turned off, it will then be categorized. So if they're not on a call, they have to go into the system and log what that video entailed.
Is there an automatic to help with records? Is there a threshold that it alerts you when a camera is off for too long or is off multiple times so that you're able to monitor and track to ensure that somebody's not abusing turning on the camera?
So I can run a report on an individual, like deputy, to see how many times he's turned on and off his cameras and what he'd recorded, how long he's recorded. So yeah, everything is being documented in the system, and there's always an audit trail on what they do.
I understand there's an audit trail, but you have a lot of
absolutely
deputies.
I got a lot of people.
Right. And so is there any way to automate so that you can ensure that, you know, people are following your policies and not abusing?
So there's no like official alarm that it'll give me, but on the main page of our program when we log in, it's called the dashboard, and it gives me a bunch of just quick references of like maybe the top people who don't classify their videos, so I can be able to see, you know, people who might be not doing their job for evidence keeping purposes. So there are ways for me to kind of have a snapshot of seeing who's actually following what they're supposed to be doing.
Maybe as you get into this a little bit more and you go through training, it's something to look at from a performance review standard too.
Absolutely.
To make sure people are following the policies.
So I can answer that too. On the dashboard, so all the supervisors are gonna have the dashboard, right? It's a map. It's a map overlay. And this is something that you guys will see when we do the show and tell or whatever we wanna call it, right? The dashboard shows every single body camera on the map as a dot. If it's green, that means their body camera's turned on. If it's gray, that means the body camera's off or the squad camera's off at that current time. So as a supervisor, our expectation, at least from an administration standpoint, is that they're gonna monitor their shift, right? I mean, that's part of the office duties of that supervisor. If they see a gray dot on the map, then that's gonna be an indication of, you know, is that person working? And if they are, why isn't their camera on, and rectify that.
So you currently don't have anything in your performance reviews or policies that would incorporate the use of cameras? That's something that's coming?
I guess so.
For performance review to make sure that they're adhering to the policies that you're putting?
There's already something in our performance, in our evals that talks about policies and safety. I mean, there's probably multiple places that the body cams will fit, equipment, you know, safety and security, and just general policy guidelines. So yeah, there's places that would fit.
Okay. What's policy or procedure for a dead battery?
They shouldn't have a dead battery, and we again, that's another part of the dashboard, right? You want to answer that? Go ahead.
Yeah, so on our dashboard, all the supervisors and up, there's actually a little widget on there that'll tell you, it's like a pie. It'll tell you how many people have 50% or above battery, how many people have 50 to 30%, and then how many people have 20 and below. So a supervisor can log in and monitor their people that they're supervising to see where their battery levels are at, and then they can notify them to change their battery. On the actual device, it alerts them, charge the batteries, but on their device, it'll alert them when they have a low battery. They also wear these wristwatches. I actually have it on my belt, but I'm sorry, like it's called a media controller. On the actual device, it'll tell them when that gets low, as long as with that dashboard that the supervisors can see. So there's a couple different fail-safes that are built into the system, so I'll make sure that to notify them that they need to change or charge their battery up.
As you had mentioned, you know, if they pulled a double shift, there isn't enough battery life, but they have the ability to charge their squad then.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that if they're running a double shift, they're going to be writing some reports at some point during that shift. They do, it's a typical USB-C cable that they can plug into the laptop and charge. Just depends on how long they'll be sitting there, but it's a 0 to 100.
It's like an hour if you plug it in the car with it. It's got a quick charger built into it, so it goes from 0 to 100 in just about an hour.
I have a question. I only received these this evening as I entered, but the policies under 526 and 425, specifically it'll be 526.9 and 425.7. There's an awful lot of gray territory that you have included in this as to when the material is to be tagged as opposed to when the body cam is supposed to run. And there's, I call it gray territory. You don't know if you're dealing with somebody who may be under the influence of narcotics, committing a crime, or somebody who may be classified as a Chapter 51, just for exemplary purposes. When do you discern when it's appropriate to let the body cam run as opposed to, and then tag whatever may be necessary to tag, as opposed to altogether decide to not record anything?
So I think I'll go through the tagging part first. As soon as the deputy is put on a call in dispatch, the video is automatically tagged. Whatever call he's on, the camera's on, the dispatch case number automatically goes into the body camera system and tags that video with that case number and the type of call it is. So most of the time, unless a deputy is not dispatched to a call or they're in the jail, because the jail system doesn't meld with the body camera system because there's no dispatch to put somebody on a call in the jail. But purely from the patrol aspect, as soon as the deputy is put on the call, they get close enough to that call where it activates, or they pull a car over and a dispatch generates a case number, that video is automatically tagged with that information. So our policy says that anytime a law enforcement or one of our deputies is having a work-related interaction with a member of the public, that camera is to stay on and to remain on.
Well, then you have listed here a complainant, victim, or witness has requested non-disclosure. Well, how could that have any teeth to it if it's going to be recorded nonetheless?
Well, because the deputies are given the leeway to turn it off if they're talking to somebody and the person says they don't want to be on camera.
Who makes the call?
Well, the example is if a deputy is speaking with a confidential informant and that person says, you're not recording me, are you? I don't want this recorded. The deputy can turn that off.
So it's left to the deputy to decide?
Correct. The deputy should have his camera on prior to that contact, and that request by the member of the public to not record will be recorded.
And you're leaving it then to the discretion of, be it a CI, complainant, victim, or other witness?
Correct.
Okay.
Which, that's a common thing. We didn't have that. That was from our Lexapol and reviewed by Corp Counsel.
And as far as discerning, again, be it medical crisis or someone who's under the influence that may have committed a crime, from an OWI to something more serious. You gave a context of being in a emergency facility. When does one decide that this is recording something that's more in line with a incompetent individual or someone that may need assistance medically, other than recording a investigative report?
So the deputies, when they're in work-related interactions with the public, shall keep their cameras on, unless the person that they're recording, and this isn't going to be an advert, if the suspect tells you turn your camera off, of course we're not going to turn it off. Okay, but the medical thing would be, and I'm, where in the policy does it say that? I guess I'd have to read what you're looking
well,
at.
Well, I'm looking the example I'm that I thought may raise this. It would be 526.9 paren E, which is likewise the same language as 425.7 paren E.
Okay, that's identification and preservation of recordings. That's not when the camera should be on or off. So if medical or mental information is contained, they should tag that as such.
Okay, it'll be tagged and recorded as, it will not be, I'll say, not recorded, but rather identified and preserved for the sake of, if necessary, to potentially review by a supervisor, or is that something that will never be recorded?
No, it's you're misunderstanding. I think there's a misunderstanding. Like, this is after the recording's already done.
Okay.
The recording exists. This is all about categorizing where does that video fall? Like, if there's sensitive information, HIPAA information, Chapter 51 information, things like that, it's categorized as such and it's put with the case. So if there's a case that's attached to a file, a supervisor is going to review it. Now, that, so it's all up, you're, again, that's the record retention portion of it that you're looking at. So that has nothing to do with whether an officer will turn on or turn off. It's just how are they going to categorize it for the case.
And 425.5. Well, even that, I'm referring specifically to 425.5. It would be the last paragraph of the page. There is discretionary authority that's given then to the officer or the deputy, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And in the event that the deputy were to deactivate the recorder, is it fair to say that no one would be able to preserve anything that otherwise would have been recorded? In other words, you're not backing it up, or does someone have the ability to override the deactivation, if you will?
They can reactivate. So a supervisor has that ability to activate from their
and
dashboard.
What would trigger that determination?
Typically, a reactivation would occur in an emergency. if we can, if we're trying to get a hold of an officer, we can't get a hold of them, we can turn their camera on to see what's going on. Correct. So this part of the policy, it was reviewed by the district attorney's office, and best practice for investigating sexual assaults, child victim statements, interviews, is to not record those statements. So we took the advice of the person that prosecutes our crimes when he said best practice is you do not, and the member has the discretion. So if they want to record it, they can. But if there is a question about the, if the officer doesn't want to record those statements, they don't have to because of the type of crime.
And in the preceding paragraph I'm looking at, again, 425.5, it would be the third full paragraph sentence beginning, the member shall have the discretion to stop the recording if the member deems that the information being obtained is of greater importance than a video of the interview. Is it my understanding that the department is letting the interviewee make that determination?
This would be only when a member of the public requests the deputy to stop recording. The deputy doesn't have to, but if he feels like if he stops the recording, the information he obtains is more important than recording that conversation, then he has the discretion to stop that recording in order to gain that information.
And that at that same time, it could be reactivated by a supervisor, is that accurate?
It could be, but it's likely not going to because it's an emergency situation. It would typically, we're not going to activate a recording. I mean, the supervisors, I guess you could call it sitting in the office, don't have the time to monitor every deputy's location and activity at all times. There's one person in the office and there's 13 or 14 deputies out on the road. So is a supervisor going to be notified every time a deputy turns off their camera? No. But we do expect the deputies, when they turn those cameras off, to have the discretion and intelligence to say, I don't need to record this. This guy doesn't want me to record it. What he's going to tell me is very important to solve my case or very important to prevent a crime. And this guy doesn't want to record it. Therefore, I'm going to show him that I'm going to turn my camera off. And once that conversation is over, I'm going to turn it back on.
So there's a fair amount of discretion that's left with the deputy. Is that accurate?
In this situation, and this situation only, and when it comes to sensitive crimes only. Otherwise, if they are having a work-related interaction with the public, that camera has to be activated.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That answers my question.
Just one quick question. So kind of in the reverse of that, if the deputy feels it best to turn the camera off, but the person wants it on, how would that work?
I mean, can't. According to this policy, and if the if they're having a work-related interaction with the public, the camera has to be on.
And if the deputy makes the call, it's best to turn it off?
The only time they can make that call is if the person asks them to stop or they're investigating a sexual assault. And if the person says, the person who was sexually assaulted is being interviewed and the deputy says, I'm going to turn my camera off, and the person says, no, I'd prefer you leave it on, the deputy should turn it back on.
When the camera goes off, does the audio continue?
No.
Okay.
But the audio and video is recorded for 1 minute prior to any activation.
So just for a moment, I'll go back to the, what I'm going to call the metadata part, which I'm assuming the officer would then decide you have the criteria for the tagging being, you know, potential criminal, claimed as requested non-disclosure. So I'm assuming that the deputy would go in and then tag that stuff, and it's either free form or maybe it's, you know, pre-populated. Is that kind of, am I getting close to that on the on that part of the tagging?
So what you're referring to on our end is called the classifications.
Right.
So after the video is done, the incident's over with, he goes back to his squad or the computer. He's going to find his piece of evidence in the program, which is called AveloWeb. He's going to find the piece of evidence. And when he clicks on the piece of evidence, there's going to be a classification tag. He clicks on that, it's going to have a laundry list of different kinds of classifications. And he's going to choose all the appropriate ones. So if it's a DC call, and then he makes an arrest, like a misdemeanor arrest, he's going to check both of those boxes.
Got it. And so I'm assuming then that that would allow, one of the benefits is that allows cross-evidence searching, right? So if you wanted to identify all pieces of evidence that were X, as long as they're tagged appropriately, you would have that kind of reporting.
Yes, correct. And also, okay, what the classifications do is mark the retention period of how long we're saving that video.
So that's where that's housed?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. The only thing at the bottom of that listing, there's a paragraph that says, anytime a member reasonably believes a recorded contact may be beneficial in a non-criminal matter. Can you explain that to me?
So, for example, if a supervisor, I hope an example will suffice.
Is it more performance review? More like,
correct.
I'm sorry.
It could be a supervisor is in the office and they have to wear their body cameras in the office. Somebody comes in and starts yelling at them about filing a citizen's complaint or this is going on and I'm really angry about it and I need somebody to complain to. Okay, and we think something could come of that. It can be tagged as that. I guess the EG listed there isn't the best example, but if it's not criminal, but we think we might want to hold on to this for a while because we're not sure where it could be classified as, something could come up later, they can classify it and it'll be tagged as such.
The point would be, in my mind, just to clarify that non-criminal doesn't mean benign, you know, nefarious. It is meant to be in that situation, because I don't want people to look at that and assume that it's some sort of data gathering or something like that, because the word non-criminal makes it feel
right.
You understand?
It's just, even though our unclassified videos are held on to for 1 year, we may want to classify that to have it held on to longer.
Understood. And a last comment on the definition around the coordinator. There's some language around the training that the coordinator will dispense to other deputies. Is there a ongoing training in mind for the coordinator with, you know, evolving best practices or anything to keep that skill set? Because we're already just kind of starting down this pathway, so it's not in here, but I'm assuming that's just part of the, it'll happen.
Yeah, I can talk about that. So obviously right now, like we said, they're getting about 4 hours of training. This will be incorporated into in-service every year. Right, because it's a piece of equipment, right? There's going to be changes to the software, right? There's going to be updates that are sent out, and we also have daily training bulletins within our policy. So there's training bulletins that go out monthly that will be, you know, if there's a change to the policy or just updates to whatever the protocols are. So not only are we going to have it going on throughout the year in terms of daily training bulletins, but at in-service every year, it's going to be something that we're going to train on.
Thank you. I was actually speaking for the court. So there's specific training for the trainer to train people.
Yes.
Right? The coordinator has.
He's been getting training for the last 2 weeks.
Right.
And
understood.
Yes, ongoing open records. We're sending them a lot of open records training. You know, best practices and body cams, things like that. And that definitely will have to continue because those things change.
Right. And I hope you understand, I hope you guys forgive
all the questioning. I mean, I think my feeling, and maybe some of the others, like, this is such a critical thing, and the risk is obviously, we want it to be there for everyone's safeguard, and if there, if there's things that are vague where it could be, you know, obviously we think everyone would always act in the best interest, but if there's leeway to take that discretion, we just have to ask about that.
Right, we understand. And obviously it took this long to get it to you because we've been working on it, you know, for months, so.
It's unenviable, I get that, so. I get that.
Anything further? Go ahead.
I just had a quick question, backing up a little bit, when you guys talked about evals and stuff like that. I was wondering if there was already like an action plan or a course of action or intervention, I guess, for officers that are underperforming as far as not turning on their cameras or shutting off their cameras in situations where maybe to the supervisor it wasn't a situation where that should have occurred. Is there a sort of like course of action to talk to deputies about that?
In general, obviously, I think a couple parts of that, right? There's never going to be too much data if we, you know, if they forget to turn their camera off. We've already had plenty of training opportunities with people recording or, you know, turning their cameras on or forgetting to turn them off. Nothing, you know, substantial, but if they fail to turn them on, yeah, it's going to be met quickly, swiftly with discipline. Just And when I say discipline, obviously, you know, discipline means different things to a lot of different people. It's a teaching moment. We need to make sure that they understand that this is extremely important. You know, it was we were sitting in front of you guys not that long ago, just getting this approved, and we're here, right? So it's going to be a learning, you know, a learning curve, but it is going to be constantly monitored to make sure that our deputies are following the policy and we're not losing any data.
Yeah, I guess what I meant was not so much discipline, but more intervention, I guess. So like you said, like a teaching moment for the deputies and stuff, so that way there's like consistent teaching and updating the deputies on how to best perform, I guess, kind of like what we have in the policy.
Yeah, and the dashboard does that, like Sergeant Forrester said. This, it's a very robust program with a lot of different things that we can monitor, and I think, Mr. Gully, you were talking about like the categorizing it. Like, you can, I was just playing with it for hours today, and you can drill down to specific call types, how much video you have for that call type. It's very robust, and you guys will see that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question. Now that these policies look like they will be moving forward, do they get put into the, specifically into the, the deputies' performance expectations, if you will? So these policies will specifically be called out if they weren't following policy 425, whatever, just like you would anything else? Or is it just in a bundle of policies?
It's already, they were issued this exact policy as they're issued their body camera. They're issued this policy. We made it live. We had to have something, right, to give the deputies when we're giving them a piece of equipment. So it's live. If there's changes that are requested, Lexapol is very fluid. We can change things on the fly, push them out. They have to acknowledge those policies. So this is live and ready, and yes, they are expected to be following this.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
So just one last comment. Again, thank you. Because of the importance of this and the discussion tonight, would you be willing to agree to subject yourself to this again, say at our August meeting, around 90 days after the live, so that we could get a chance to see the dashboard after it's got that data in it, and just, you know, I think for the public's benefit too, to get transparency into that and how we're doing at that point?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay. So this is not a normal resolution, but it will be going in front of the county board. What I'm going to ask to do is put a vote to it so I can let the other supervisors know how we voted on it this evening, if that's okay with the committee.
just a head count.
Just a head count, basically saying that we approve the, as they are this evening.
And you're not going to need a motion in a second, just a head count?
Yeah.
Let's just...
I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah, just to move it along for...
Using governance?
Aye.
Supervisor Nordigan?
Aye.
Supervisor Celebrate?
Aye.
Aye?
Aye.
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 Okay, I'll report it was unanimous on the, when it goes in front of the full board on the 18th. Okay?
Thank you.
All right. Any other business allowed by law? Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn. Second.
Using governance? Committee?
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thank you very much. See you later.
Thank you.
So the only one I didn't get is you'll have...
That's just going to be a long night. I thought I...